Good afternoon, and welcome to the Lambda Weekly Show. We don't have any music today. I think David took it home, and David is not with us either. He's feeling a little under the weather. Get better, David. But I am Laurent Landis, as usual, here with the Patty Fink. Got a great show planned ahead for you. It is Pledge Drive. Our guests today are Marilyn Bennett and Gil Caldwell. Well, I'm going to get to them in just a moment. But again, it is Pledge Drive. So it's time to give us a call.
972-647-1893. That's 972-647-1893.
Go ahead.
And I was going to say, it's a great time to give. We're starting off the new year. It's a great way to celebrate our upcoming 34th anniversary in August.
34 years.
34 years on the air. We're the oldest, longest-running LGBT radio show anywhere in the country. This is the time to support KNON because KNON has supported us. We're one of the original shows still on the air when KNON went on the air.
Absolutely.
In August of 1983. So,
absolutely.
Show your support. Give us a call, 972-647-1893.
Again, that is 972-647-1893. We also have, I'm going to tell you about this, we have some tickets to give away. One of them is for a show. It's called In My Life, a musical theater tribute to the Beatles. I should have gotten this for Danny. He's a huge Beatle fan. And that's Saturday, March 18th. It's a tribute to the Beatles at the Arlington Music Hall. It shows at 7:30. For $150, you get a pair of tickets, and you get to meet and greet with the cast. That's awesome.
That's a fantastic deal.
Yeah, so we know we got Beatle fans out there. Give us a call at 972-647-1893 and pick up those tickets or just donate however much else you can. We still have our other
T-shirts. We've got pens. We've got mugs.
We've got
backpacks.
We've got aprons.
My favorite.
Your favorite.
And my new upcoming favorite, the canvas bag.
That's awesome. The most sensible thing you can get. We all have to go buy groceries.
Yep.
Or buy something, and you're doing a great benefit to the environment. So, and you look cool because it has KNON on it.
And it's such a functional bag.
If
you shop for groceries, as I do.
We all do.
You can put that heavy stuff in that canvas bag with the long straps that you sling over, and I end up slinging like three when I unload from the car, you know.
You get a workout.
Oh, yeah. It's a great deal.
It's a great deal. Again, one more time, 972-647-1893. Now, let's get to our guests. I'm so excited to have them here. Again, it's Marilyn Bennett and Gil Caldwell. They have made a film, a documentary, called From Selma to Stonewall. The film explores the relationship between the civil rights movement and the LGBT movement for equality. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
Let's start from the start. How did this film come about? How did you all even meet?
Well, the story isn't quite this way, but people like to say that we met in jail when we were arrested.
That's a great story. I stick with that one.
Which actually is a much better story. Well, we were arrested together, and that was at the United Methodist General Conference in 2000 in Cleveland, Ohio. We were fighting the anti-gay policies of the United Methodist Church. And that's where we got to know each other. We walked together around the march around the convention center before we reached the area where we were arrested, and just talking. I was very aware that I was walking with someone that had marched in so many civil rights movements and was giving our community a big gift by being with us, and I couldn't take that for granted. So we were, you know, sharing stories. And then probably 3 years after that, recognizing that we are, as Gil likes to say, an odd couple, that we can talk, we decided to do letters back and forth to be very honest, to be stupid, to be vulnerable, just to really write what we were thinking, and as a way of to give people a way to look on a relationship. Well, so we went from the writing to several years later saying, well, if we take this to multimedia, then it reaches a whole lot more people. And then it became, we should make this a documentary, because we plan to go around the country talking to people about the civil rights movement and the LGBT equality movement. We had just come off Obama's first election where he was elected and Prop 8 passed in California. And there was a time period where white bloggers, gay bloggers, were saying that it was the African Americans' fault for Prop 8 passing. They came out for Obama, you know, and that just simply wasn't true. And I'm so glad that was debunked fairly soon.
Yeah, for our listeners who may have short memories, or maybe you just don't know at all, at that time when Prop 8 passed, the reports were saying that overwhelmingly the blacks, the African Americans in California, voted for it, and that made it pass.
Yeah. So the LGBT task force did a study. I mean, they, you know, people came in with facts saying no, but it showed clearly a tension between larger communities.
Right.
And so it was like, well, let's go find out what people are saying. So we didn't start out with a storyboard or here we go, we want certain people to say certain things. It was, let's go find out what people are saying. Let's go to Selma where Gil marched with King. Let's go to Stonewall. Let's talk to people who were there. And then much happened in 2013-14 with Black Lives Matter and so many other marriage equality, so many other things. That we just kept going.
And before you explain to our listening audience, I guess I should have said this, but Marilyn is openly lesbian, and Mr. Caldwell is a former reverend, or a retired reverend.
Yeah, openly straight and openly African American.
Oh, openly African American.
There you go.
And I'm openly white.
And she's openly white. So that's why they're known. Would you say the odd couple or
odd couple? Yeah.
Yeah, odd couple. So, and it's sad that it has to be even looked at like that. But
well,
unfortunately, it is.
We would be odd no matter what.
I'd say it's such an open thing. You could just go any direction you want to with odd couple.
Right. Exactly.
Right.
And I've heard too that. Pastors and those in the ministry are just like nurses. You never retire.
That's true. Yeah. I wanted to say before I respond to questions is that I'm pleased to be here, and I'm hoping that your contributors during this hour will break some records. It would be wonderful if while Marilyn and I are here, your callers really call in and just inundate you with their gifts. And at the end of our program, I will be making a small contribution to the station.
Oh, well, thank you.
That's all right. So
thank
I want to do that. But yeah, as Marilyn was simply suggesting, our history, and I guess one of the things that I particularly, as I've gotten older, the importance of us not operating in silos in terms of our justice movements. Because, in fact, in the film, we talk so much about the intersectionality of these isms, and it's important for us to recognize that there is a relationship between all of them, and we need to cooperate as never before. So I think the film does that, and Marilyn and I have enjoyed this interaction. I guess the final thing I would say here is that the importance of being an ally, I've learned that it's important for me not only to be concerned about black rights, but therefore becoming an ally of gay rights has really added a dimension to my life. And I suggest that every person certainly be involved in his or her own particularity, but also be an ally for another group of people. That adds, I think, a lot of zest to one's life.
And we're really seeing that, too.
We are.
With the intersectionality today, just in the last, has it been 3 weeks? 3 weeks
right,
in a day,
right.
That we have a new president. And the solidarity that I've seen, just in my own personal experience of going to protests, and like we've been at the airport for hours on end, and you know, other things. We did the Women's March, all of those things. The intersectionality has been, and the bonds we make in those scenarios just continue to grow. And I think that's a really important thing that we see today, every day. I'm gay, I'm a woman, but I'm out supporting immigrants.
Right.
You know, all of those things. I think that's really powerful.
And again, Gil, you march with, the epitome of marches,
sure. Uh-huh.
You know, from Montgomery, I'm sorry, from Selma to Montgomery, you uh-huh. know, that's a long walk, by the way.
Exactly. Yeah, well, I did it in two phases. I was there after Bloody Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Martin King put out a call to religious leaders all over the nation to show up, and we did. I'm still amazed that back in that day, we were able to respond in such a short time to come to Selma Tuesday afterwards. And then, of course, I went back to Boston and then went back. And one of the great things is that the night before we marched in Montgomery, of course, Harry Belafonte, you know, the singer, was very much involved. And he had invited just a number of his Hollywood stars. He had chartered a plane. It was just great being there with them. And actually, I was sitting on the stage with Belafonte and others because I had a contribution to make for Boston. But it was just wonderful. And then, of course, the next day, we marched into Montgomery.
So one of the criticisms that I hear from, you know, people who are opposed to what's going on, as far as from our perspective, they think marching is a waste of time. They think we just need to suck it up and move on. We're out whining. What do you say to that? You know, well, my immediate response, and I have said this to a couple of my friends, you know, if it wasn't for marching, I wouldn't be here. I would not be here. But are you encouraged to what you're seeing this happen right
now? I'm extremely encouraged by the women's marches. I participated in my hometown where I live now, Asbury Park, a community of 16,000 people, but there were 6,000 persons in the march there.
Wow.
And that was
wow.
important. I think the thing that a march does is that it clearly indicates that I am not alone.
Right.
That there is a cadre. There are millions of thousands of people who share my same concerns. And therefore, marchers, of course, are able to capitalize on that. Of course, one has to then tie some action steps after that. And I think that's one of my concerns that we make sure. In fact, Marilyn and I think, see our film as simply being a kind of an addendum or an extension of the march, Women's March, and hopeful that people will say that, gee, this film was simply one of many pieces in following up to what that was all about. So it's important that people, as they see the film tonight, will understand that it's simply an extension of what happened on January 21st and will be happening hopefully a lot.
Yeah, I'm this film needed to be made. I haven't seen it yet, and I am going to see it. And for our listeners, it will be showing today or tonight at the Texas Theater at 5 o'clock. I was told that there are tickets still available, but I think they're running out very quickly.
Aaron and I are
going
to go.
Yeah, I think I got to fly solo, but I'm going.
Well, you have a kid.
I do have a kid, so my husband's at home with the kid. So, but yeah, this film needed to be made, and documentaries usually take a long time to make. How long did this take to put together?
We started in 2010. And there was a point where there were so many delays. This was about 2014, and I just thought, the most hopeful thought I could have was, well, maybe something's going to happen that we need in the film or that's going to make this really relevant and important. And we could not have imagined today. I don't think any of us could. And this film is couldn't be more relevant. People are coming to it. The discussion afterwards is always about how do I get involved? How have you stayed involved, especially for Gil? How have you stayed involved this whole time? And there's been questions about, okay, there's marches, but what else can we do? This is the time for it.
Yeah, and we talked about that before the show, Gil. Marches are great, but you brilliantly pointed out there needs to be a follow-up. What do we do after that?
Yeah, and by the way, in terms of outing myself, have I indicated that I'm 83 years old? It's important for your listeners to realize that.
I did not know that.
Not only in terms of race, not only in terms of orientation, but also in terms of age. So it's important to know that, which of course relates to the whole matter of keeping on, keeping on. And of, as Elizabeth Kubler-Ross said something about, I want to live until I die. I want to be about justice until I die. And, of course, there have to be. Of course, particularly now at my age and with a handicap that I have, I cannot march as I used to march, so I can be involved in other kinds of ways. But I think a plan is important. And, of course, we're talking about legislation. We're talking about consciousness raising. I think one of the things that comes out of the civil rights movement that is so important is the importance of nonviolence. We cannot allow those few anarchists who, of course, were active in, I guess, the University of California, Berkeley. But that does not represent the seriousness of the justice commitments that we have.
Exactly.
And the thing that kept us going was simply the discipline of nonviolence, which is not only helpful in terms internally, but in fact, it's an indication that even though you differ with your opposition, you respect their humanity. And that, for me, is very important. And so some training in nonviolence is, I think, very, very important. Mm-hmm. In fact, in the demonstrations that were ours within the United Methodist Church, we had some time spent in nonviolent preparation. And I guess I'm hoping that will be an important part of the kind of action that takes place from this point on.
And I think we've seen that in largely in most of the marches and demonstrations in the past month. You know, of course, there's always some exceptions of people getting out of control, you know, if you want to call it rioting. But I... Would you agree, Patty? I think that's,
I agree. I think Berkeley's a big aberration.
Yeah.
I think, by and large, everyone that I've witnessed has been amongst ourselves in groups. Mm-hmm. We've been joyful. Mm-hmm. And even though we may be chanting and such and you know, angry opposition to something, some injustice that we're protesting.
Right.
But the unity there is just unmistakable. It's palpable as you walk through a crowd. And I think that that's energizing. And I have never, quite honestly, I have never seen so many middle-class white women who have in their phones today the phone numbers for their two senators.
Wow.
And their representative in Congress, their House representative in Texas, and their state senator and governor. And they are calling every day. In fact, there are new groups on Facebook that... a relative of mine, in fact, set up one where she's writing to congresspeople and she puts her letters out so that others can just do a quick copy paste and change it up for themselves and not have to think too hard and long because they have other responsibilities during the day that can still get their letters off. And there's some creativity coming from the newbies.
And that's
who
good.
Been protesting ever. That I've just found fascinating.
Yeah.
What a joy.
Yeah, and that's a good thing. We all always need new blood and new ideas. That's how you think, keep things fresh and exciting and maybe a different way to get some a good response. But mentioning phone numbers, you need to have your phone number, our phone number, on your speed dial. And that's 972-647-1893. Again, it's 972-647-1893. Give us a call. Make your donation. Let KNON know that you appreciate what we talk about here on Lambda Weekly and just even having it here as a presence. We'll be going to take a quick break and we'll be right back with filmmakers Marilyn Bennett and Gil Caldwell.
My name is Rollins Gillow and I've been gay all my life and you have too. So why don't you approve it by calling to support Lambda Weekly here at 89.3. They're going to give you the number.
Welcome back to Lambda Weekly. I am Laurent Landis, again here with Patty Fink today, and our lovely board operator, Josh and Chris. So give us a call at 972-647-1893, and you can talk to either Josh or Chris. This is Josh and Chris. He has a split personality. So that would explain it to our guests.
People at my synagogue know me as Joshua, but my given name was Chris, so it's a long story.
But you can still talk to both of them. Give us a call at 972-647-1893. We're talking today with Marilyn Bennett and Gil Caldwell. They have made a film called From Selma to Stonewall. It explores the relationship between the civil rights movement and the LGBT movement for equality. And, you know, I was telling you know both of you before the show, this is a film that needed to be made. A film, the subject matter that is near and dear to me. I've talked about this, I've even written about it a couple of times, because I've always thought that the way the dialogue or the conversation was framed between the African American community and the LGBT community was erroneous. I thought it was framed like it was a competition. You know, I used to hear some African American preachers would say, you know, I was born black, you know, you weren't born that way, so I'm entitled to the rights, you are not. Gays and lesbians didn't have separate water fountains, they weren't slaves, and you know, just go down a list. And it's like, well, it's not a competition. It's not a competition. You know, at the end of the day, everybody still, you know, deserves the same rights. And, you know, in the early movement, well, I don't know if it's early, but when I got out of high school, which is early 90s, and I became
young thing.
Yeah, young thing. And I became aware of the LGBT movement. And I know at the time, the LGBT community borrowed heavily from the civil rights movement, and that made a lot of African Americans upset. There was a lot of animus towards our community. Do you think that has changed now? Is it better?
Well, I think it's changing. By the way, what's that phrase, imitation is a form of flattery or something? I'm not sure that we've understood that.
Yes.
But I think that's the first concern. And of course, it's important to identify, and I certainly share this, is that there is obviously a lot of unfinished business vis-a-vis African-American justice. And of course, some people therefore suggest that because of that unfinished business, there is not time to deal with a new issue. Of course, I disagree, because I think that, in fact, there are parallels. And I think we've got to avoid this kind of equivalency comparisons. It's important to understand the similarities in justice. I mean, Martin King said it well, didn't he? Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere.
Yep.
And so understanding that, I think, is important. I think there's changing. I've been interested that in terms of the Black Lives Matter movement, there are queer persons in the leadership.
Absolutely.
Queer women in the leadership of that. And of course, I say, and I talk, as I particularly talk within the African American community, and there still is resistance. I talk about my three B's. Two of them very obviously having been out, one not self-acknowledged, but I talk about James Baldwin. In fact, there's a new James Baldwin film out that I believe is just...
I heard nothing but great things.
It's up for an Academy Awards called I'm Not Your Negro.
Which is very powerful. Then, of course, Merritt Rustin, who the great organizer, who, of course, was really involved in the civil rights movement. And then the one person who did not, I guess, proclaim, but I think one of the things is we understand that the late Congresswoman Barbara Jordan was herself gender loving. And I think it's simply look at those three personalities and then the thousands of other persons of color who are same gender loving, that there is within the African-American community people who have made such magnificent contributions to the human rights struggle, to the black struggle, that I just cannot understand how anyone would suggest that they ought to be second class. And of course, I say within my own, and I would go on the air and say that in my own United Methodist Church, my own ministry has been enriched as same gender loving persons have touched me in terms of being mentors. And how then can I turn my back? So I tell the story of how I, years ago, had to come to grips with my own latent homophobia when a white Episcopal priest, Malcolm Boyd, who was a civil rights activist, a writer, etc., he came out of the closet. And this was in the 70s. And I had to ask myself, Chi-Chi, do you throw away his books? Do you burn his books? Do you deny him? And I realized how foolish that was. Here, Gil Cowell was this civil rights foot soldier. And yet, when one of his heroes announces that he is gay, you have some reservations. And therefore, that for me was a kind of an epiphany moment in terms of realizing, therefore, from that point on, I became an ally advocate of gay rights.
Well, basically, you grew. Why do you think that... I don't want to generalize and say all of the black community, straight black community, but why do you think that growth has been so slow to come?
I think, of course, I have to blame religion. I think, unfortunately, scriptures... In fact, in the film, a marvelous person, as you see it, of course, talks about how, of course, the good news of the scriptures so often become bad news for people as we exclude people. I say frequently, we don't talk enough about it. I mean, the whole matter of the slavery of blacks and the segregation of blacks, there was this idea of Noah's curse that in the Hebrew Bible, there is, of course, Noah being drunk and his son seeing him, and therefore his issuing a curse. And somehow that got twisted to assume that was a curse of black people. And therefore that justified the discrimination against blacks. So we've got that. And of course, in terms of the black community, the matter of church and scripture is important. But I cannot again comprehend if, in fact, we know that it was an error to proclaim that Noah's curse was against black people. Why in the name of heaven would we simply take a bit of scripture and suggest that the scriptures are against same gender loving people? So it's as we move forward, I think things are changing, and that's so important.
You know, for years now, my organization, the Dallas Gay and Lesbian Alliance, has been doing trainings in the Dallas Police Academy and the Dallas Fire Rescue Academy on LGBT cultural competence. And I have this little kind of 15-minute clip of just, it's rapid-fire photos of people who are LGBT across time. And the three Bs are, in fact, in this little clip. And afterwards, we have a discussion about were there any surprises and such. And one time there was a case where an African-American recruit in the class was terribly surprised and almost offended that Bayard Rustin had been included. And the I did not even say anything, but the other African Americans in the class turned around and educated this guy. And so I asked, well, why is this not known? They said, oh, everybody knows it. We don't talk about it. I said, why is that? They said, the black church. And so it was a really interesting dialogue we had, and there were a lot of people afterwards that came up to me, and it's a four-hour class that came up, you know, in the hour breaks, and said, this is fascinating. I would love to have this discussion again, like, to talk about this further, just to have better understanding of each other.
Sure.
So in this one class, we were talking about LGBT issues and kind of the difference between gender identity and sexual orientation and all of those kind of boring things. But when we talked about real people, it got even more real.
Well, and that cuts both ways. Mm-hmm. When we were looking at these two movements, to me, I was like, you know, this is a false dichotomy because there's a cross-section of people living in both. Mm-hmm. And so to compare them ignores the people living in both. And often in the LGBT community, people of color are not heard. And often in communities of color, LGBT people are not heard. And that is, every time I hear a comparison, it just pains me because it just ignores the present. It disappears so many people. And we have to, the film is so much about that, of lifting up voices of people that are at the intersection, because we can learn from them. These intersections are not new. There have been people Mm-mm. talking about them for a long time and working together and doing all that for a long, long time. It's great to get fresh blood, and it's great to have people mobilize. It's awesome. But there has to be an awareness that this isn't new. And there are people in it, and it's not all reinventing the wheel. But at the same time, one of the tenets of Black Lives Matter is you just bring whatever gift you have. Not everybody has to be protesters. Not everybody has to be a writer. There's, you know, you come with what you have. The other thing that we have to acknowledge is when we're in our silos, we are less stronger, and that those in power would love to pit us against each other, and have.
And are trying to again now.
Trying to again now.
Yeah.
Just last week, we got a caller. Well, I guess that was a good question, but wondered why we as a community are supporting what's going on with the Muslim faith, you know, with, you know, the ban, and, you know, like Patty and so many others were out at the airport and protesting to let them in, and thought it's the right thing to do. It's the right thing to do. Why not? They're human.
Well, and the premise of the question was that all Muslims hate gay people.
True. That was part of it.
Well,
and that's not true.
Muslims are all straight.
Yes.
I mean, exactly.
You know,
exactly.
I mean, we are in all walks of life, so every issue is our issue.
Right.
And the other underlying premise, of course, was that every Muslim is a terrorist. And that was, the whole question was repulsive in a lot of ways, but it was great to be able to talk about that.
Exactly. That's what I say. You know, at least you pose a question, and then, you know, we got to have dialogue.
Right.
Unorthodox guest as I am, could I ask, have people started calling in terms of contributing to the station?
Hey, I'm glad you brought that up.
Because I want to hear that. I'm supposed to be setting your record.
The phone isn't ringing. Give us a call, 972-647-1893.
Yes. I don't want to have to call myself.
Right. Don't do it because I said so. Did it because Mr. Caldwell said so. 972-647-1893. We do have our usual premiums, like Patty mentioned earlier. You know, we've got the backpack. You can get that for $50. I still have mine. Coffee. I drink coffee every single morning, and it looks so nice. I have a coffee mug. I have a K-Newman coffee mug on my desk. Get that for $50. What other items do we have, Patty?
We have a fleece blanket that has K-Newman on it. It's a beautiful throw that you can keep in your car for any impromptu picnics or stop in a park on a beautiful day. That's for a $75 pledge. Erin's best favorite hoodie is a hoodie sweatshirt. And she says, you know, of all of them, and she has a lot of them.
That's what you've
told
me. Like
water bottles and hoodies. She has this one, and she just loves it. She says it's the best one ever. It's a K-Newman drawstring pullover hoodie. and we go all the way up to 5XL. So we've got you covered. $80. So an $80 pledge. Give us a call, 972-647-1893. And the canvas bags for a mere $50. And they will last you forever.
Again, that number is 972-647-1893. And I just want to remind everybody, all the money goes to the station, not our fat salaries of $0. All the money. You know, it costs to run the station. Even though, you know, this is a public station, broadcast station, you know, we got to pay for the light bill. We got to pay for the renting of the tower that gets the signal out. We got to pay for the rent here, and it's going up. Mm-hmm. So it does cost money. We got to pay for this. Is this the 1980s board or when the 90s?
We're in
yet?
The 90s now.
90s now. Okay, we're going to pay for this 1990s equipment that we have. It costs, people. So give us a call at 972-647-1893.
You know, we were talking earlier about the intersectionality, and I think if you've been around in the North Texas, or especially the Dallas community, there was a day in the 80s and into the 90s where women and any person of color had to present more than one ID to get into a gay club here in Dallas.
Yeah.
And white men could just waltz in with one ID. And how many people carry two or more IDs? It's kind of rough, right?
Right.
So if you're a woman, you needed at least two. And if you're a person of color, you'd sometimes three to get into a club. So we see that we have to own our own history. We have to recognize that this has taken place, and there's still a big rub between kind of the white LGBT community and the people of color community. It's getting better, but we're not there yet either, even in our own community. Yeah. So if you consider yourself siloed and you're happy to be siloed, you're really not, you know?
Yeah, we better check ourselves.
We have to, because this is it's pervasive. Mm-hmm. And we have, in our community, we have Muslims, we have United Methodists, we have Jewish people.
If anything, we're more diverse than any other community.
Exactly.
I mean, we are everywhere.
Yep. The whole.
Everywhere.
The whole range.
You know, earlier, Patty, I was asking Mr. Caldwell about, you know, what it's like, or, you know, the African American community not being really receptive to us because of our borrowing heavily from the Civil Rights Movement. You know, you're definitely, you know, the queen of activism. Was that like a concerted effort to not start using those comparisons in the gay lesbian community at some point? It's like, you know, we got to kind of do this on our own.
I don't know. I think we openly and proudly borrowed from the Civil Rights Movement in so many ways that have been so effective. In opening dialogue and encouraging people to express themselves in a nonviolent way. And some of the most powerful moments, I'm kind of choking up about this, powerful moments we've had is when we've had a hate crime. Mm-hmm. Where somebody's been brutally murdered or some sort of loss in our community, maybe in court. And we would have these candlelight marches. Yeah. And it would just be sort of silent in the darkness, but the candles lit our way, and those are powerful moments, and they're not just powerful for us. They're powerful for people when they see that news clip at night on the TV.
I you're saying that reminded me that, of course, after the death of Matthew Shepard, I was pastoring a church in Denver, and I was at a vigil at the Colorado State House, and I was asked to be the first speaker. And that was a very moving moment as I was there, not only being present with that community, but also clearly trying to manifest this sense of togetherness. And that was very, very important. But that was a very, very moving moment for me personally to be a part of that community.
And I think, too, in the Selma March, the original Selma March, when it was broadcast on television, I think that was a big turning point for a lot of people.
Yeah.
In seeing the abject violence that those in power were imposing upon those who were simply walking, you know?
Absolutely.
And I think that's a powerful thing. And when you see, when we see that kind of replicated over time, and in, you know, since then in other communities and other ways, I think that's very, very powerful moment when someone says, I'm not, because I always say, let the bigots show themselves.
Yep.
Because I think that says people want to say, that's not me. And they, when they see that, they have a natural reaction to say something to themselves, like, right on, or that's not me, this is not any part of me. And it makes them think about it. And for the LGBT community, oftentimes you'd be amazed, there are a lot of straight people who never thought about gay people. No. Or trans people.
Nope.
Never had a thought. Yep. And I think it's beginning to, you know, to sink in that maybe I do need to think it, even within myself. I have to confront myself about this. And how do I feel about that?
Mm-hmm. One of the things that Marilyn and I do is to interact publicly. And I'm about to ask her a question. I think before the broadcast, I was raising the question of Stonewall Democrats and log cabin Republicans. And mm-hmm. if at this point in history, there could be a kind of rapprochement between those two groups as never before. What will you think about that? Simply, I mean, we're talking about, of course, what is it? The Republican, the gay persons within the Republican Party are what log cabin Republicans, I believe.
Correct.
And then Democrats, Stonewall, and the whole matter of whether or not that's a resource that needs to be tapped as never before. What do you think, Carolyn?
Well, I think that we have to find common ground with whomever we're talking to. Yeah. And that takes a commitment to hear each other past our very strong feelings in our differences and our political differences. But I think taking time to narrow it down and say, okay, what has your experience of discrimination been? What has your experience of discrimination been? Okay, these are similar. How do you see this being solved? How do you see this being solved? Is there any way we can work together?
Yeah, and it just seems to be this one in history that I would hope particularly that log cabin Republicans would want to be in relationship with persons beyond their own party, and knowing that they're persons with whom they have some real similarities, it must be very, very a sense of great aloneness, if you would, to be a log cabin Republican these days. And I'm hoping that if, in fact, there are persons who are listening, that they would see that this is an opportunity to reach out. So,
absolutely. And we're feeling a little lonely right now. So you need to give us a call at 972-647-1893 and make that donation that we so much need and so much will appreciate. Again, that's 972-647-1893. We're going to take a break and we'll be right back.
But you know, there was a time when they wouldn't even let us near a station, and now we have our own show. Come on. Give to Lambda Weekly, 89.3. They're going to give you the numbers, which are...
There we are. Welcome back to Lambda Weekly. I'm Laurent Landis here with Patty Fink, and we are talking to the filmmakers of From Selma to Stonewall, Marilyn Bennett and Gil Caldwell. The film is airing or showing tonight at 5 o'clock at the Texas Theater. Can't wait to see this.
Historic,
yes, very much so. I was wondering, was there any moments in the film where you all were surprised about what you heard and saw from either side of the aisle? You know, this film is about the intersection between the African American community and the LGBT community. Any, like, surprises, like, we weren't expecting that, or...
No. We had one surprise is that we had a really hard time of getting anyone that opposed us to talk with us.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
We didn't want to give voice to a real rabid person, but we were trying to find someone that would discuss people who think that gay rights have absolutely nothing to do or nothing in common with the civil rights movement.
Mm-hmm.
And they would tell me that, and I'd say, well, even more so now, we want to talk to you, but... That was it. They didn't talk to us.
Hmm.
Maybe they didn't want to go on record.
No, I'm sure that's exactly what it was.
I think that was it. But I mean, it was different cities, calls, email, people connecting us. And then even at one place in Denver where Gil was going to be, we finally had two people and they didn't show up.
Oh, wow.
Oh no.
So
wow.
That could be for many reasons, but that was very... Very, very odd.
How many cities did you all go to make this film? A lot.
We went to a lot.
If you call, of course, here in Texas, of course, early on, we went to your hometown. Did we go to Amarillo? No, we didn't.
No, we were here in Dallas. We went up to Denton, where some of my family is. We walked through a cemetery, and this is just a funny story. It was pouring down rain. It had been for days, and I didn't really know where the plot was, and we... walked. Our shoes were coming off because there was so much mud. It was that kind of Texas wet. We finally found the spot, and it was right next to a driveway where we could have driven right through it.
Oh, my gosh.
There have been so many crazy, funny moments, and I would say that humor is what keeps us going in the civil rights and any rights movement.
Well, you know, you say that, you know, you couldn't really find many that were willing to show their face on film and share their anti-gay feelings and thoughts, but we know they exist. I'm just curious, were there any more? The South kind of gets blamed and assumed that most of everybody down here is bigoted. But from where you all interviewed, did you see one place that was more rampant bigotry than in any other place? Or just kind of.
No, I'd say that.
Just kind of equally around. Yeah.
There's a line in our film about that racism is alive in the LGBT community and homophobia is alive in the black community, especially in the church. Well, you could say that in the white community easily.
Absolutely.
And we want to make sure, you know, this is, we are discussing across intersection, across lines, but we are very aware of, I mean, that's what we've been fighting is basically.
I'm so glad you brought that up. I find myself defending a community that doesn't support me. And what I mean by that is, you know, obviously I'm black, but the black community, or a lot of the black community, wants something to do with me, and doesn't want me in a church, doesn't want me to be out, doesn't support my relationship with my husband, et cetera, et cetera. But at the same time, I think there's this notion out there that the black community is more homophobic than the general community. And I don't know if that's true. I think the perception is just because people assume that because you're black, you should know better. Mm-hmm. And then when you see someone as black and they are homophobic, it's like, oh, wow. So I think it's a perception thing, but I don't know if it's actually true.
I think it's a perception thing. Yeah. I mean, we've been fighting.
Because it's absolutely in white churches, exactly.
You know, predominantly white churches and Christian evangelicals.
Yeah.
I mean, so.
But I will say, you know, again, I'm one of those people, I'm really in the middle. I'm at that crossroads. I have been accosted twice in public for being gay, and it was both times by black men.
Really?
Yes. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
It all gets connected to gender roles, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And of you're supposed to act certain ways.
Yep.
Male, female. And so there's the, Gil talks about in the film that someone said to him, Martin Luther King didn't march so two men could sleep together.
Right.
Well, what about two men to love each other?
Right.
What about people to be who they are? So often it gets narrowed down to a sex act or, you know, that's what they see as the sin, the act. But it sure seems like they're thinking about sex a lot, because when someone tells me about their straight partner, I just don't think about that being information about their sex life.
I don't think about it generally, and quite frankly, I don't really want to know about it.
I want to know.
I just know that they're in a relationship.
Like, that is an indication, oh, so you're married and you have, and that's why I think marriage equality, having the married, having that name, having husband, wife, those words, translates more. It's like, oh, that's your husband. I have a husband. I mean, it might be, wait a minute, you're not supposed to have a husband.
Right.
But still, those words translate to a type of relationship, to living together, to picking up the kids, to who's going to fix dinner. I mean, you know, that's where it becomes real in our shared humanity rather than, what are you doing?
Right.
One of the persons in the film that we interviewed, Brad Braxton, a clergy person, and it'd be interesting to really talk about this. He is suggesting sort of that it's the experience of slavery and the sexualized experience there, where in fact there was such negative activity, slave separation, et cetera, discouraging serious relationships. Brad Hayden, he's such a scholar. And it would be interesting to hear more from him, but he was simply suggesting that we're talking about an approach to sexuality and sexual activity that comes out of the experience of slavery, which I found very fascinating.
Mm-hmm. And it's a very interesting connection.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's there's discussion here right here in Texas and I think around the country because we have looming before us this horrific bill, very similar to North Carolina's HB2. We have our SB6. And there are some similar bills that have been filed, but this has been kind of focused on this. And it was originally called by Dan Patrick, our lieutenant governor, the Women's Privacy Act, which I just find really kind of hilarious because what we're really talking about are gender roles. Mm-hmm. Because under this premise of Women's Privacy Act is that there's no, you know, if you're fearful that all men will walk in and assault women, are you not fearful that there are men who would walk in and assault boys?
Little boys. And we know they get assaulted all the time.
He doesn't care. He doesn't seem to care about what happens in the men's room, right?
Right.
So his primary focus and speech after speech after speech that he gives is about the women. We must protect the women and the children. And this is about gender roles because I'll tell you what, my wife gets a sir at least a couple of times a week. She's tall. Mm-hmm. She's I think kiki. The word is kiki. Both butch and femme.
Uh huh.
But she gets that, especially if somebody sees her from the back. They may see her as a male.
I get that too.
Right, and
I think it's because I'm so tall and people are just looking.
Right.
And then they look up. Oh.
Right, right.
But I do get that.
But there are women who can go into the restroom and would be harassed, if not, invoked with this SB6 right. Invoked for it to pass, because she doesn't belong in here.
And that's exactly.
And it's about their gender role, not about their actual birth gender, assigned at birth gender. You know, that's.
Yeah.
And that's precisely, you know, you're talking hypotheticals here in Texas, but that's exactly what has already happened in a state that passed that. A couple of, one girl, you know, she was, first of all, she was young, and she kind of, I guess from afar you could look, she did like a little boy. She never said she was a lesbian or not, but she just didn't fit the gender stereotype. But she was, in fact, the girl and was harassed before she was able to actually get into the girls' restroom. Is that what we really want?
And I think it's a rebellion of white America, especially white male America. You know, they refer to us as the nanny state, like the progressives and stuff want a nanny state. They want a big old daddy state. They want daddy to make all the decisions for all the women, everybody. That's what it is. And this is the big old daddy state rearing right. its head. You know, they want to be able to say, if you don't look like a woman, you don't go in our women's and children's
right,
restrooms,
right.
You know, never mind the men. And I think it's the same thing. Mm-hmm. It's expressed every kind of way imaginable over time. Mm-hmm. You know, it really is.
Mm-hmm. We're running out of time, but before I wanted to ask Gil before the end of the hour, you know, there's been, as far as I know, Martin Luther King never made any public remarks about gay and lesbians or the gay and lesbian community. But Curtis Scott King has.
Yes, yes, yeah.
Very a big supporter of our community. Did you think that's accurate to say? Because I don't know what he said behind closed doors. Do you think she is just echoing what her husband really thought, or you think she just kind of gone out on her own?
I think he was there, and in fact, you know, part of the history is that there were persons within the movement who wanted to separate Rustin from Martin King, who wanted to sort of kick him out, and Martin King would not allow that to happen. And he, of course, was aware of Rustin's sexual orientation. So, yeah, in fact, one very prominent African-American clergyman in the movement sought to do that. In fact, he said if it did not happen, then he would begin to critique Martin King. But King held fast to that. Of course, one of the things that concerns me, and I find myself as a foot soldier wanting to sort of pass the baton of leadership over to my son, particularly because the King children, particularly Bernice King, for instance, is a clergy person, led a march against same-sex marriage in Atlanta. And so that's one of the reasons I sometimes mention some work my son is doing. And so may I mention a book that he's done?
Absolutely.
It's called Intelligent Influence, and it's available, of course, at Amazon, as well as an audio book. And his theory is that it's important for us at this point to really ask ourselves, from whence comes the influences that make us do what we do or say what we do? And I think it's important for what we're talking about. And I guess I'm hoping that the Texas community might find themselves drawn to a book by Dale Caldwell, my son, Intelligent Influence, and somehow get a version either in Amazon or the audiobook, because that sort of speaks to that. What makes us do what we do or say what we do, what we say or feel what we say? It's important to sort of unpack that.
And, you know, you mentioned Bernice King, and you would think, because her, you know, the family that she's belongs to, what she's experienced, what she's been taught, and that she's part of a younger generation, everybody thinks that the younger generation is always a little more accepting than the generation prior to them, but that's not always the case.
And speaking of others in the movement, I understand you know Peter Johnson, mm-hmm. Reverend Peter Johnson, who's an icon in the city of Dallas.
Yes, he was one of our first interviews. We came to Dallas. It was our first filming location.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Really?
The National Gay and Lesbian Task Force was here doing their Creating Change in 2010. Mm-hmm. And so we interviewed Peter. These are people that went into the film, and C.D. Curvin is a big part of the film.
Oh, go C.D.
Awesome. Yeah.
C.D.'s been on the show many times.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's terrific.
So, we're coming up on the hour. I do want to remind everyone, it is Pledge Drive. Give us a call at 972-647-1893. Again, that's 972-647-1893.
I'm just going to plug in a new thing. They're getting rid of the black line of T-shirts.
Yeah, what color are they
going
to be?
I don't know. I think we're going to blue. We've had black T-shirts as a base of the T-shirt for many, many years, and I think they're changing it up a little bit. We'll still have our KNON Voice of the People logo, but this is your chance to stock up now on our traditional T-shirts. So,
yes.
Those are available for any number of donations. If you give a $35 pledge, you can get a T-shirt. You get a $40 pledge, you can get a T-shirt. So you can go online and pledge online at knon.org, and you can select your premium with a picture right there when you donate. So, and just be sure to if you can't spell Lambda Weekly, just put LW or that big queer show or... you know, LGBT or whoever. We're here.
They'll figure it out.
They would. They will. And that way we can get credit for your donation. So,
absolutely.
Give us a call, 972-647-1893, or go online, knon.org, especially those listening to the podcast. Don't have a wreck here if you're listening in the car. As soon as you pull over, you can go to knon.org, 972-647-1893.
And last few minutes about the film. Any other items? Has the film, is this the first showing of it?
No, this is a theatrical premiere in Dallas, but we actually, this week, this is the sixth.
Okay.
Screening we've had this week.
Oh, awesome.
And we've been showing the film since last April, was when we had our world premiere.
Okay, so it was going on a year that it's been out.
Mm-hmm. But it's primarily festivals and special events.
Yep.
And soon we'll be launching the DVD and our streaming. So that's a good thing to say, because our website is very simple, from SelmaToStonewall.com. And that's where you can find out about screenings, ask for a screening, and eventually be able to get the film.
After the screening tonight, will there be a Q&A?
Yes, Q&A and a panel discussion.
Oh, awesome.
That's a wonderful news.
CD will be there, and I believe it's Oliver Bloomer, maybe?
Dr. Oliver Bloomer.
Yes.
Oh, fantastic. I think we've had Oliver on the show before. Dr. Oliver Bloomer is a trans activist.
Yes.
Trans man.
Yes.
I just texted with him at length yesterday.
And then awesome. Pastor Neil from Cathedral of Hope will be the moderator.
Okay.
Very good.
Okay.
So it's going to be really important. And we may have 500, 600 people there. So as far as the LGBT community coming together and seeing something all at the same time and being in that discussion and being discussion about the intersection, I think it's going to be a powerful night.
Awesome. And again, that is tonight at 5 o'clock at the historic Texas Theater.
And would you get tickets through the Texas Theater or through your website?
No, just through Texas Theater.
Just, okay. Very good. TexasTheater.com, I believe it is.
Marilyn, Gil, thank you so much. It's been a really honor to have you all on the air. Seriously, thank you so much.
Thank
you so much. And we'll see you all tonight. Again, we've still got a few minutes. You can call 972-647-1893. Thank you, David. Get better. And we will see you all and talk to you all again next week.